Now, this past Monday was World Epilepsy Day, which seems like a good enough reason to delve into the topic in health and wellness today. And I'm delighted to welcome on the line Dr. James Butler, who's a neurologist at Constantia Burg MediClinic. Thanks so much for your time. Lovely of you to have you on the show this afternoon.
It's a great pleasure, Pippa.
Thanks, Doctor. Now, most people, I think, know that epileptics are at risk of seizures, but probably not all that much more than that. Could we perhaps start with a definition of what epilepsy actually is?
Well, I think we should start with something even before that, which is that not epileptics are at risk of having epileptic seizures. We all are. And it's a risk that every person who walks this planet actually carries, believe it or not. So something like 1 in 10 people on the planet is going to get a seizure at some stage in their life.
Really?
Can it happen at any stage? And about 1 in 30 people is going to happen to have more than one seizure in a lifetime. So common problem. Mm-hmm. What is an epileptic seizure? It's actually defined rather curiously by the physiology. In other words, what happens in the brain and not by what people see or experience.
Right.
And that's because there are lots of things that look like epileptic seizures which aren't and which people can mistake. So to get to sort of the pure definition of the entity, you need to define what happens in the brain, which is kind of this electrical storm. So one seizure, epilepsy is in fact a bad term. It's better to think of it as the epilepsies, plural,
okay.
Because these are many conditions with many symptoms, and the symptoms vary because different parts of the brain can be involved in seizures, and that produce, because the brain is regionally specialized, can produce all sorts of symptoms. So firstly, think about it as the epilepsies, and not epilepsy.
Right.
And then think about us all being at risk, because it can start, as I say, when you lie in your mother's womb, and it can start when you're 110 years old.
Very interesting that. I know it's sort of in broad definitions, they talk about idiopathic epilepsy and then symptomatic epilepsy, and it has to do with what causes the seizures. What are the kinds of things that might cause a seizure? I understand from what you've said that there are many different causes, but can you sketch some of the broad and more common ones?
Yes, sorry, I didn't answer your first question, just briefly. Mm-hmm. So there's this electrical storm. So basically brain cells talk to one another like people do at a rugby match,
yeah,
or a cricket match or a soccer match. And brain cells do that day and night when you're awake and asleep. And when a try is scored or a goal is scored, everybody erupts. So there's the storm. Electrical activity is a storm, so it's much louder, as it were, than usual. And it occurs in unison or in synchrony, so everybody shouting together. So that's
right.
By very simple terms is what goes on in the brain. It's a self-limiting process. The brain has inhibitory mechanisms, shuts it down quite quickly in the vast majority of instances, and that in itself is a benign process in the brain. Of course, there may be sequelae, you might injure yourself, etc.
Right.
To answer your most recent question about what causes it, all sorts of things. So it can be a complex of genes, quite common. A very common form of epilepsy is attributable to a variety of genes. We know that there probably are well over 100 genes involved in the genesis of seizures in different people, different combinations of genes.
Right.
And patients are often puzzled when I say to them, you've got a genetic form of seizures and they haven't got anybody in the family with epilepsy.
Yeah.
And so the way that one works is that, your face, the analogy I always draw is your face is completely unique. Or I shouldn't use say completely unique, it's unique. And the reason it's unique is you've got a mix of genes, some of them from your father, some of them from your mother, a couple of mutations probably, and that gives you a unique appearance. Mm-hmm. And a unique combination of genes or a couple of important contributory genes can produce seizures, because every single one of your brain cells has a myriad of genes which determines its electrical function. So your firing patterns of brain cells, these electrical activity is determined by your gene.
Okay.
So you can just have a combination of genes and that can cause seizures. And funny enough, that doesn't start from day one. Why not? Because just like your face changes in life, the genetic program runs its course. Same with happens in the brain. Genes are differentially expressed throughout life, turned on and off, etc., and the program runs its course. So genetic forms of seizures might start at 10 or 20 or 30 or whatever. So they're more common in the first 20 years of life. So that's a cause, genes.
Okay.
And then anything that happens to your brain in life, some of the genetic causes include tiny little birthmarks in the brain. So just like you have them on the skin, as it were, yeah. You can have them in the brain. They're otherwise completely innocuous. They're not tumors or anything. They're just the way the brain cells are laid down. And that just produces aberrant firing in that part of the brain, generating seizures, and that's a cause of epilepsy. So little birthmarks, common things. And then any other little tiny little abnormality, clumps of blood vessels, head injuries, previous head injuries, meningitis, in principle, anything that goes wrong in the cortex, in the brain cells, can cause seizures. So later in life, it might be a little stroke or dementia or whatever. But in the vast majority of people, it's not a sinister cause like a tumor, which is an occasional cause for epileptic seizures.
That's good to know. In terms of looking for it and diagnosing it, I mean, you've said already that many of us, all of us, have the potential risk to have seizures at some point, and some people will have a few and then have no more, etc. How do you actually make a diagnosis of epilepsy, given the sort of big pool of factors we've been talking about here?
Yeah, so it rests on three criteria, I would say. The first is the story that the individual has to tell, so how they've experienced an event or events, and I'll come back to that in a moment. The second is what other people see. So if you lose your memory or you're unconscious during part of the event, then we rely heavily on what other people observe. And of course, this is fleeting and sometimes emotionally traumatic for people, so accounts are not always very perfectly reliable. And then thirdly, the sort of, as it were, third leg of the tripod, as it were, is what we see on a test called an EEG, which is an electroencephalogram, which measures the brain's activity. Now, believe it or not, that the brain's electrical activity can be abnormal when you're not having seizures. So there may be little discharges that are milliseconds long, which actually are a vital clue to the diagnosis of the condition. So if you see those things that we call spikes, you can be pretty well sure someone's got epilepsy. And so those are the three important bits: what the patient says, what other people observe, and then what we see on the test. And we use all of those in arriving at a diagnosis.
Okay. You talked about the patient's story and the observers, and somebody has asked, is it normal for a patient not to remember what happened during a seizure?
Unquestionably. So if the seizure involves the parts of your brain that are responsible for memory, so those reside in your temporal lobes, in structures called your hippocampus, Greek for seahorse. So you've got one in each side. And if the seizures occur just in that part of the brain, someone will just lose their memory for 30 seconds or half a minute. And funny enough, because they've lost their memory, they don't realize that anything's the matter. So I have plenty of times been passing someone in.
Right, we're just losing the quality of the phone line there, I'm afraid. So I'm going to put Dr. Butler back to my producer and ask if we can just do a bit of moving around in the room until we find a better patch of signal and hopefully continue with the conversation. In the meantime, let me just remind you, if you have a question in response to what you've heard, or there's something that's always perplexed you that you'd like to know more about relating to epilepsy, please take this opportunity to send an SMS to 31567. You can leave that question as a voice note on 072-567-1567 or call in on 021-446-0567. I think we've got Dr. Butler back. Sorry, we just lost that last bit of phrase. You were talking to us about how it is that someone can potentially lose their memory of a couple of seconds, for example.
Yes, so you might, if the seizures typically last, you know, the order of sometimes a few seconds up to 2 minutes. So if you have a seizure in the memory part of the brain, then for that period, you won't remember anything. And if you don't remember anything and you don't realize anything's amiss, then you might think nothing's the matter with you. Mm. So I've had people dragged in here by family members into my consulting room on several occasions and having an argument in front of me. The one says, there's nothing wrong with me. And for instance, the spouse says, well, you know, you're having these episodes where you're just losing your memory for 30 seconds. Yeah. So they lose their memory because that part of the brain is non-functional during that period, be it 30 seconds or 2 minutes, during which the seizure occurs.
Hmm. Fascinating. Now, the good news is that I know advances in treatment of epilepsy and drugs to suppress seizures is a field of medicine that's really a lot of research has gone into. They don't always work for all patients, but let's start with a discussion around treatment and start with anti-epileptic drugs. Do they don't work for everyone, Dr. Butler?
Correct, yeah. So in terms of, again, because we think of them as the epilepsies, it's important to say that this is not sort of a bit like cop spraying. You just spray every type of epilepsy with any old medication. So there are specific types of seizures, and some of them respond disproportionately well to particular medications and others yet to other medications. So the first step is to try and identify what type of epilepsy the individual has, and then to prescribe the appropriate medication. The goal of medication is to improve someone's quality of life, and obviously part of that is preventing seizures, and part of it is avoiding side effects. So that strategy works in about 70% of people who you get completely seizure-free, and people are always fearful that we're giving them medications which are going to dull them or make them, you know, cognitively odd, etc. And the short answer is that not infrequently, medications do cause side effects. Happily, we've got a multitude of medications at our disposal. And so it is a process of finding a medication which suits the individual as well as being effective. And so sometimes you start a medication and it works, but the person has side effects, and then that's a very good reason to switch them to another one. Again, tailored to that individual. So we in 2020 are not quite at personalized medicine where we can predict, although we've got some reasonable ideas about which medications work for which types of epilepsy, we can't predict side effects yet in an individual. And hopefully one of the advances that will come in due course with molecular advances and advances in genetics and advances in understanding the individual with his seizure disorder is which medication will work for him. So hopefully one day we can run a panel and say, look, you aren't going to get any side effects on this medication, therefore we're going to give it to you now. At the moment we give it, and if someone has a side effect, they just caution beforehand, if you feel it, just stop it and it'll go away tomorrow. Happily, these medications don't produce, with one or two rare exceptions, any permanent sequelae. The ones that do have basically disappeared off the market for obvious reasons. And the others we use judiciously in improving someone's quality of life. As I often say to people, you know, if you have side effects, then your overall quality of life is worse. It's not better, because after all, seizures only occupy very short periods of your life. And I think that takes me to another issue, which I just wanted to mention very briefly, and that is that the stigmatization of this condition in 2020 is really a major problem, because this is a medical condition no different to migraine, a lot shorter than migraine in principle. They both happen in the brain. They're both self-limiting, and they don't in themselves cause any trouble. Other than in seizures, if you have major seizures actually are the minority of seizure types. People often have minor, the most common forms of seizures are minor. But the seizures themselves occupy such a small part of someone's life. The quality of life that they have is substantially determined by the way they view themselves and particularly the way society views them. So if you're fortunate enough to have a personality that deals with these things very easily, you minimize their effect on your life and say, you know, this is like a couple of minutes of my life, and I'm going to get on with life and live a life otherwise normal within constraints of my condition, then you do very well. On the other hand, if you live in a society where it's stigmatized, where all sorts of myths exist about it, then clearly your quality of life is going to be impaired. And if you're at a school and you get teased because you have what is just yet another medical condition, and we're all going to get medical conditions in our lives, and in principle, epilepsy is no different to that. In fact, as I just say it again, it's remarkably short. Then the stigmatization does an incredible amount of damage to individuals. You saw from my introductory remark that it's an extremely common condition. And the fact is that many people around you and who clearly walk that you'll encounter in society, these are not people in institutions. These are everyday people you encounter who have seizures. I discover them in social life quite commonly. People discuss things with me confidentially. And because of the stigmatization, people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to be stigmatized. So that cycle is something that we still have to break in 2020.
Well, I hope a conversation like this helps to break it. Dr. James Butler, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Neurologist at Constantia Burg MediClinic.